DW Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Africa Link, broadcasting live from Bonn, Germany. I'm Assumpta Latus, and together with me here in studio today is my colleague Isaac Mugabe.
Thanks indeed, Assumpta. It's always a pleasure to be back the microphone after such a long time. Remember, you can join the debate on everything we are covering here by going to our Facebook page, DW Africa. Coming up, Nigerian Election Tribunal to rule on opposition candidates' bid to overturn results. What do Nigerians think of the session?
The feedback we're getting on social media, it's been mixed. Some are saying, hooray, kudos, he got re-elected, he'll continue, quote his good work. Some are saying, oh, this shouldn't have been the way it ought to have gone.
We will also be hearing about ECOWAS's position on xenophobic attacks in South Africa.
We have a role to warn South Africans and Nigerians and other countries to unite. We need to unite, to cooperate, to maximize the support we give to each other.
These stories and much more to come, but first, the news in brief.
DW News.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. The body of Zimbabwe's long-time ruler Robert Mugabe has arrived in the capital, Harare. President Emmerson Mnangagwa was at the airport to pay his last respect. Mugabe died in a Singapore hospital on Friday at the age of 95. His body will lie in state for 3 days before being buried at still undecided location. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has suffered yet another blow after a Scottish court ruled that his controversial decision to suspend Parliament was unlawful. The Prime Minister formally put the House of Commons in recess until mid-October, meaning lawmakers will not get back to work until just 2 weeks before Britain is due to leave the European Union. Opposition Labour Party Brexit spokesperson Sir Keir Starmer welcomed the ruling.
It was obvious, I think, to everybody that not only was shutting down Parliament at this crucial time the obviously wrong thing to do, we should be sitting each and every day to resolve this crisis. For a court to make a declaration like that on an issue like this is a huge thing. It vindicates everything we've done last week. And I think what I can do and what others need to do is to get back to Parliament, see if we can't open those doors and get back in and get Boris Johnson back in Parliament.
Meanwhile, the government has appealed against the ruling, with the case set to be heard in the Supreme Court next Tuesday. Beijing has summoned the German ambassador after a meeting between Hong Kong activist Joshua Wong and Germany's foreign minister. Wong arrived in the German capital Berlin on Monday, where he met German foreign minister Heiko Maas at a meeting China branded disrespectful. The activist has continued to urge Germany not to turn a blind eye to protests going on in Hong Kong.
The protests in Hong Kong are not likely to stop because we are still fighting for our fundamental rights and democracy. If we stop our pursuit and determination of democracy now and let KLM subsist, international attention on Hong Kong protests might fade out and political suppression will take place and continue in the future.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. A first group of Nigerians have boarded a free flight from Johannesburg to Lagos following a week of violence targeting foreigners in South Africa. It wasn't immediately clear how many people were on board, but the Nigerian government estimated the group to be slightly above 300. In total, 640 Nigerians living in South Africa have registered to take free flights back home. U.S. President Donald Trump has been marking the 18th anniversary of the 9/11 terror attacks that killed nearly 3,000 people. He and the First Lady Melania Trump welcomed victims, families and survivors at the White House, where they took part in a moment of silence. For more news and information, head on to our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Jane Nyinge.
Thank you for joining us. You're listening to Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latus.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. Remember that you're live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We shall come to your comments whenever we can. We begin the program in Nigeria, where a tribunal in the capital, Abuja, is expected to make a ruling on a complaint filed by the main opposition candidate that President Muhammadu Buhari's election in February this year was fraudulent.
The opposition candidate, ex-Vice President Atiku Abubakar, wants the election result to be overturned. Buhari has been in power for almost 100 days now. And to know more about the importance of the ruling, I spoke to Shola Yeyesimi.
The import of this ruling, because like many may know, the appeal by Atiku Abubakar was filed on six grounds. Two of those grounds are key to his petition. These two grounds are whether the president, who got re-elected on the, February the 23rd, was educationally qualified to contest the election. And the court has ruled that he was educationally qualified to contest. The second one is whether he was...
What do you mean by education-wise? Is it secondary school?
Exactly. Okay. Secondary school education, because the article had alleged that the president didn't sit for his school certificate exam in 1961. He had no certificates attached to his application to the electoral body. So the courts had made that ruling that, based on the evidence before it, that the president, Muhammadu Buhari, satisfied that requirement. And the second one had to do with whether the elections were validly conducted. And the key thrust of the petition of Atiku Abubakar was whether electronic voting and the result generated could be used as the valid results. And the petition, the tribunal has ruled again that based on electoral law, electronic voting is not in the law, though it is a guideline prescribed by the electoral body, but that it stands on the law, and it has also ruled in Buhari's favor.
According to what we are reading on social media and what we hear from Nigerians, is that Nigerians have moved on, and these politicians are taking or pulling back the population into politics. Is this what you feel?
My reading of this is that the political class has a way of just getting the electorate, the voters, the citizenry back to discussing politics and issues that concern them. But the thrust of the matter is that Atiku Abubakar, as a contestant in that election, has a right, because this is like a court of first instance. He has a right to go to the Supreme Court. So politics has a way of drawing Nigerians to discuss, because I was also looking at some things on social media. Someone was saying, let all these politicians leave us alone. We want good governance. They are birds of the same feather. They are two sides of the same coin, and all this kind of comments. But the bottom line is that the average Nigerian just wants things to become better for him at a time the economy is not doing as it ought to be doing, and with huge debt overhang on the country's neck.
So if it were Atiku to win, what would happen?
Well, definitely, if it had gone in that direction, the president, who got re-elected according to the ruling of the tribunal now, has a right to appeal to the Supreme Court. And that's the final bus stop. So
why sitting as a president?
Yes, as an incumbent.
What have you been listening from Nigerians? What do they think about this ruling?
The feedback we're getting on social media, it's been mixed. Some are saying, hooray, kudos, he got re-elected, he will continue, quote, his good work. Some are saying, oh, this shouldn't have been the way it ought to have gone. But you and I know the judges have the final say.
Our very own Shola J. Yesimi, a journalist from Nigeria, speaking there about Nigerian politics. And now we did ask you on our Facebook page, which side do you see this ruling going? Mohammed Adam, you're saying, I side with any that is best for the commoners.
Well, for Rabiu Omal, his suggestion is quite clear. He says Atiku is going to win the case if justice is well done by our land judges, he calls them.
And Livingstone Tete, you're saying, as I foresee Mr. Buhari winning the case, cost and safety of state will be considered by the court.
So far now, Assumpta, it's a kind of draw, one's
right
for Atiku, another one for Buhari. But we have someone called Diso Nafiu. He says they are all the same. The only difference among them is that one agreed not to steal Nigeria's money, the other agreed to steal and share it with the allies. Many thanks for the comments. Now we head on to another story that has been making headlines around the world. It's in the UK, where Scotland's highest court has ruled that the Prime Minister Boris Johnson's suspension of the British Parliament was unlawful. This is a blow for the government as it seeks to leave the European Union on October 31st with or without a deal.
With 7 weeks until the UK is due to leave the EU, the government and Parliament are locked in conflict over the future of Brexit. What does all that mean? My colleague Sumi Somaskanda spoke to our correspondent in London, Birgit Maas.
It's really uncomfortable for Boris Johnson's government because it implies that he didn't give the real reasons for suspending Parliament. He said it was to prepare for new legislation, a so-called Queen's speech. But the court has ruled that it was to shut down Parliament. That's the implication. Also, it implies that he misled the Queen because he advised her to agree on this prorogation. So really very, very critical, I think, for the Prime Minister. And some commentators are even asking whether Boris Johnson could even survive that.
And Birgit, where does this leave Brexit? I mean, where do things go from here?
Well, the court has ruled that it was unlawful, the shutting down of Parliament, but it hasn't ruled Parliament to start sitting again. Now, this is, of course, what opposition politicians are asking. They are asking Boris Johnson to immediately open up Parliament, open the doors of Westminster again and recall Parliament. However, will they actually win this battle? We will probably have to wait for next week when the Supreme Court will also hear this case. There are several cases in the London Supreme Court.
Birgit Maas speaking there from London. And now back to the continent. The ECOWAS Parliament has convened in Liberia's capital, Monrovia, to discuss, among other things, the xenophobic violence that occurred in South Africa during a series of deadly attacks on foreign nationals, many of them Nigerians.
Apart from the xenophobic attacks, another issue that the ECOWAS Parliament will be discussing that is affecting the region is the lack of freedom of movement among the member states, which remains a concern. Many Nigerians plying their trade in South Africa have had to return home because of periodic attacks, some of which have led to death. Now, some ECOWAS members of Parliament have been telling our own Evening Pade in Monrovia their concerns about the attacks. Take a listen.
Every Nigerian is touched by what is happening now. We believe that it shouldn't be the case at all. Yes, maybe some people from other countries in South Africa living their lives, doing businesses and all that. So what is happening from all this point of view in South Africa is tragic. But I expect that the ECOWAS meeting to discuss this issue and help come up with solutions to all this, calm nerves and all the rest of that. But most important of all, we have a role to warn South Africans and Nigerians and other countries to unite. We need to unite, to cooperate, to maximize the support we give to each other for further growth.
Every African, sincerely black African, was support the black African which was in South Africa. So now what is happening is very worse for me. I'm very destroyed when I think about and when I see some video in the television too, which is very, very, very bad situation.
Those who are lawmakers from the ECOWAS Parliament that are meeting in Liberia's capital, Monrovia. Now, Assumpta, this is a topic that we've been covering in our editions in the recent days. And we've had, yes, of course, you know, there's so many concerns that Africans are attacking their fellow Africans because of work.
Yeah, and just to mention today, Nigerians actually are flying back from South Africa to their country, to Nigeria. But that's not the the only people that are going back or are scared to leave in that country.
Well, let's take it to Facebook page. You know, as usual, welcome your comments. And this is your time. Yusuf Abidemi says, please come back home and continue your good life. No place like home anyway.
And I have one comment here, which is very interesting. Bashir L, he says, well, I stopped watching Trevor Noah, you know Trevor Noah, yes, the comedian, after his xenophobia issue, after this xenophobia issue. How come he mentioned zero thing about it?
Well, Lee Ann Asher says this is so sad. SADC should intervene and South Africa gets sanctioned.
And Sadiq.Kora, you're saying Nelson Mandela is turning in his grave.
One more comment before we let you off the hook. What someone called Wealthiest Solomon says South Africans will forever regret their actions meted on Nigerians. They have eaten the hands that fed them, so they'll not be helped anymore. We appreciate your comments and keep the debate flowing as usual. The platform is yours. DW Africa is our Facebook name.
Welcome back to this edition of Africa Link, Wednesday, the 11th of September, 2019. I'm Assumpta Latus.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. As usual, we are live on our Facebook page, W Africa. I can see many of you there pushing the debate forward. It's time to acknowledge you. Tutu Desnick says, greetings, DW Africa. I'm listening live from the Emirates. And Nomadi Nene says, hi, Nigeria. Well, Nomadi... Hi, back to you, but this is DW Africa in Bonn. And so is Fru Askada. Emmanuel says there's a lockdown in Cameroon, but anyway, we shall come back to that story whenever we can. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Ghanaians protest the presence of a timber processing factory because they think it will destroy the environment and natural vegetation.
Already our vegetation is not good and has been declared a desert-prone area because we are very close to Burkina Faso, which we are not very far from the desert.
Yes, that story is coming up. And I think the community there in that village, in one of the village there, is very angry. They even staged a protest march to protest against this wood processing factory.
Yeah, well said, Assumpta. But first to Cameroon, where there's been mixed reactions after President Paul Biya announced that he will initiate a national dialogue to solve a separatist crisis in the country's English-speaking regions.
Biya said the talks led by the Prime Minister and starting from the end of this month would bring together a wide range of people to seek ways to end violence that has plagued the region in recent months.
In a moment, we'll be hearing from an analyst to dissect what lies ahead of the much-anticipated dialogue on the crisis in Cameroon. But first, let's hear some reactions from Cameroonians themselves.
Thank you, Yukorete.
As I know our Anglophone brothers, this dialogue will not succeed since the leaders are not released. Really, I don't want it to be like this, but as these guys are, leaders can be in jail and they say there's dialogue.
Finally, Biya has recognized that political problems can only be solved by providing political and non-military or judicial solutions.
I think it is important today that those who are in the bush should stop fighting, lay down their weapons in order to come to dialogue. Because the important thing is not only dialogue, the important thing is that all the actors of the Anglophone crisis can really come to dialogue.
Biya should free people who are in jail and then talk about dialogue. When people are in prison, who are we going to talk to?
Mixed reactions there of Cameroonians speaking about the Paul Biya's speech that he made yesterday. But the conflict has been there for quite a while now, more than 2 years. What do we make of the timing of Cameroon's Biya to initiate a dialogue to end the crisis that has left 2,000 people dead and displaced 500,000.
Exactly, Assumpta. That's the million-dollar question everyone is asking themselves. Well, to answer it, I spoke to Johannes Stahl, whose organization, the Swiss Mission to Africa, it's a church-based organization that is offering emergency relief services to the affected people in Anglophone regions. He had some comments, good comments to talk about because he's involved in, you know, helping these people there. Let's take a listen.
I think it's really interesting, as you stated, even though I realize from our contact to the Anglophone partners that their expectations were not too high. So many times the president promised something and it happened otherwise. We only can have some ideas of why now. Actually, what we hope is that the international voices have come to President Paul Biya's ears and that there is some kind of insight that he should now take initiative, since he has seen that the life sentencing of those opposition leaders a few weeks ago really hardened the conflict and brought more violence.
Now, Biya said the dialogue will reflect on restoring peace, security, national unity and progress. But he did not specify if representatives for the separatist movements would be invited to participate in the talks. How feasible is this then?
Well, actually, this really makes it in some kind just a cosmetic speech, since the government until now is not able to identify the leaders of the armed groups, since anybody who take courage and gave his name and showed his face in terms of secession or some kind of a critical statement to the government found himself afterwards in jail.
Now, on our Facebook page, we've been asking, you know, our followers, especially those in Cameroon, whether they think that this dialogue will yield so much success in the absence of the separatist leaders and Maurice Kamto, the opposition leader who's still in jail. And yes, They're pessimistic about the whole thing. Why?
When you put those in jail, who is left? And with whom do you want to talk by now? So we can understand the demand that there should now be a way of releasing secessionist and opposition leaders. And on the other hand, to admit that although forces of the government were part of violence and escalation.
I was speaking to Johannes Stahl, whose organization has been offering emergency relief services to affected people in Anglophone regions. As usual, we shall come back to your comments whenever we can. We still have much more for you, so don't go away.
Living Planet Africa.
Living Planet Africa takes us to northern Ghana. Residents of Tumu, a village in Upper West Region, are demanding for an immediate shutdown and evacuation of all equipment of a timber processing factory.
They claim the processing factory in the village is threatening the environment of which they owe their survival to. They have now given the farm to move within 1 week, saying further activities of the factory is an attempt to destroy their lives. Maxwell Souk reports from Tamale, that is in northern Ghana.
Hundreds of Tumu residents joined a protest march against a wood processing factory in the area. They want the authorities to revoke the license that was given to the developers to engage in the business. They also want a subsequent shutdown of the facility, according to Waso Ibrahim, one of the protesters.
Already our vegetation is not good and has been declared a desert-prone area because we are very close to Burkina Faso, which we are not very far from the desert. We also have rainfall irregularities. Our rainfalls are not very regular.
70% of the people here produce a bulk of Ghana's food staples, such as maize and other cereals. They also provide much of the country's charcoal, which is widely used in Ghana for cooking. For Waso Ibrahim, allowing the destruction of the forest means destroying their livelihood.
Anything that will have negative impact on the production of maize right here is as if you are terminating the lives of the people here.
The protesters petitioned the town leadership, including the Sisala East Municipal Assembly, to revoke the licenses of the company. The municipal chief, Mr. Karim Nunyua, says he stands with the masses.
If you are setting up a timber factory in this part of the country, the first question to ask is, where is your source of raw material? If your source of raw material is to rely on this, our vegetation, it means that you are going to kill generations. Even the current generation will not even survive, let alone to talk about future generations.
At the factory, workers refuse to speak to me, but I notice there is not so much going on here. It's likely the work has stopped. the city authorities had directed the electricity department to cut power supply to the factory as an immediate measure pending its closure. Municipal Chief Executive Mr. Karim Nonyoa again.
As we speak, we are expecting their report to revoke the license that the EPA has issued to the gentleman to establish a sawmill, which has turned to be a timber factory that is establishing.
Earlier this year, the government placed a total ban on the felling and exportation of rosewood because the species were getting extinct in Ghana.
Maxwell Sook with that report about the plight of people living in Tumo village in northern Ghana.
On the spot.
Now, in all male vocal band called Tech Six has taken the South African music scene by storm. The group fuses modern and traditional sounds and now tours the world sharing the music of Southern Africa.
Well, for starters, the band is currently in Bonn, Germany for the annual Beethoven Fest that highlights the works and music of...
I'm going to see them tomorrow.
Really?
Yes.
...of renowned German composer Ludwig van Beethoven. They have been performing with classically trained musicians and singers. Ineke Mills has this report.
Those are the sounds of South African a cappella group Just Six, merging with German vocal ensemble Siela. Together with the National Youth Orchestra of Germany, the two groups are performing at the annual Beethoven Fest in Bonn, Germany, bringing together the cultures of Southern Africa and Western Europe. With a combination of contemporary jazz, pop, R&B, gospel and soul, Just Six aim to capture a truly global sound. Their performances were not only appreciated by audiences here in Germany, but also in Russia. Something the band didn't expect, as explained by Nantuko Malaza, a member of the group.
We received quite nicely in Moscow. We were there for the Spring a cappella festival. And different crowds, different energies everywhere. We performed every day. And funny enough, the Russian people are really nice people, you know. And yeah, they were dancing and they were smiling, which is something that's not so common apparently there. But we were able to warm their hearts, yes.
So, how much does a South African a cappella group know about an 18th century German composer? Bass singer Kwande Kakata knows an interesting fact or two.
I know a bit about him. I know that at a point in his career he went deaf while he was composing some of his pieces. So that's quite amazing to know that he did some of his music without any of his hearing. So that's amazing.
South Africa has been in the headlines recently following a spate of xenophobic attacks and ongoing allegations of corruption among the political elite. The atmosphere in many parts of the country is tense, to say the least. For Take Six, their music is a way of fostering reconciliation and promoting peace.
Now we are facing a different type of struggle now in South Africa, where it's more social, you know, how to live together amongst ourselves and all those things. There's been a lot of stuff happening over the past couple of years that have really resounded this kind of disunity in how we live with each other, you know. And I think through the music that we do, is the best way to tap into the spirit which then conquered, you know, back in the early, late 80s, early
90s. Oh.
Oh, wow.
That was fantastic, breathtaking. You know, that report was compiled by your own Ineke Mills. As soon as I said, you are going to watch the festival.
Yeah, I'm going to be listening to them
tomorrow.
Oh,
you're just kidding.
I'm not kidding. This is the truth.
Well, you tell us to, you know, whatever transpired there.
After that.
Bring the story. Now, before we let you off the hook, you've been commenting on one of the stories that we've covered, and that's about Cameroon's President Paul Biya initiating a dialogue to bring back peace, reconciliation and safety in the troubled Anglophone regions. Assumpta, we have some comments.
We do. Pascal Fonyun, you're saying, let the dialogue be led by an independent body somewhere out of Cameroon, not inside Cameroon. Yeah.
Sodium Natural Procede, who sent a comment live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, says Bia, or thinks that Bia, is not sincere to himself when he calls for dialogue with preconditions.
And answering to a question, what do you make of Bia's latest peace initiative? Joseph Chukwu Emeka, you're saying absolutely dialogue is the solution.
Well, Assumpta, I think, you know, at this stage, all Cameroonians or even, you know, people in the region have to remain optimistic about dialogue, you
That's true.
Yeah, especially that, you know, there are going to be many stakeholders to take part in it. Anyway, there we have to come to the end of the show. On behalf of the production crew led by Celia Frolish, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Assumpta Latus. Thank you very much for your company.
DW. Made for Minds.